Star Walker Studios presents Star Citizens United, a podcast dedicated to making the most of the future hit PC video game, Star Citizen. Greetings, citizen, and welcome to the Star Citizens United podcast. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. Today, I discuss Wheels Op Systems, Consolidated Outland, and the Murray Cup. Hello, citizen. Welcome to episode 23 of Star Citizens United. Thank you so much for flying with me today. So I am continuing with the lore episodes. I've got three topics today to discuss: Wheels Op Systems, Consolidated Outland, and the Murray Cup. And I will have links to the Galactic Guides about these topics in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com. I'll start out today talking about Wheels Op Systems. Wheels Op is a Croshaw-based limited liability corporation established in 2092 for the express purpose of developing Starship targeting system software. Wheels Op's critical feature was a unique, if unappreciated, one. They adhered to a strict made-here philosophy. Unlike every other sensor company on the market at the time, Wheels Op used absolutely no shared source code. The result was a more stable platform, but also a closed one which could not easily integrate outside enhancements. The corporation's first project was a multi-million UEC bid to develop sensor rigging for the UEE Navy's carrier-based strike contract, the spacecraft design proposal which ultimately resulted in the Gladiator bomber. Lacking name recognition and any sort of technological pedigree, Wheels Op's bid failed in favor of the Dysys D33 multi-suite, long since replaced on active-duty Gladiators. The company's founders briefly considered disbanding, but ultimately decided that they believed in the product too much to let their first loss define them. With that defeat, Wheels Op settled in for the long haul, competing on the civilian market as a higher-end third-party upgrade option. For two decades, the company went largely unnoticed. It signed no first-party contracts and was viewed as a reliable but generally unspectacular option. That all suddenly changed in 2922. On August 9th of 2922, a digital plague began to spread from spacecraft to spacecraft. Broadcast from an unmarked sensor buoy parked in geostationary orbit within sublight broadcasting distance of Terra's second largest trade lane, a signal began to move across the system. Within hours, hundreds of ships were carrying an unnoticed software slot in. Within a week, this package had unknowingly spread to a dozen star systems. And then, Deathgrr struck, with a virus designed to infiltrate the shared code found in most sensor systems and timed to strike simultaneously around the galaxy. Deathgrr's trick didn't disable spacecraft, but it did lock every infected sensor suite to grayscale mode. Traffic ground to a halt until a fix could be reached. Billions of UEC and shipping were lost. Deathgrr was never captured or even identified, and it remains unknown whether the attack was intended as a prank or something more sinister. An analysis of the software and the drone turned up nothing, but the method of infection was clear: a small worm script delivered directly to Common Core code. And unquestionably, the winner in the situation was Wheels Op. With their unique code, Wheels Op sensors were unaffected by the attack. Overnight, the company became a household name and sales skyrocketed. Some newscasters went so far as to suggest that the company might even be behind the attack. Whatever the truth, by the end of the fiscal year, Wheels Op had captured a 35% market share in the private spacecraft sensor market. With the additional revenue, the company diversified, building robust physical radars and scanners in addition to continued development of their proprietary software. Now a market leader in all aspects of sensor technology, WillsOp is routinely pursued by top-level spacecraft designs and certain top-of-the-line design ships with their technology as a default install. The military, too, has come courting. WillsOp packages are standard in several advanced UEE StarCraft. Today, WillsOp's prime seller is the P3 Autocompensator, an aftermarket software installation capable of being configured for almost any current year civilian spacecraft. In essence, anything from a Drake Herald to a Miss Call D can be equipped with P3 software. The P3 is one of the best targeting systems on the market, capable of direct tracking of up to 3 spacecraft and passive tracking of up to 512 ships in a standard interaction sphere. Video game designer Original Systems has licensed the P3 interface design for their Arena Commander game. It currently comes standard with all trainer ships. Origin Jumpworks GmbH has also signed an agreement with WillsOp, making them the exclusive supplier of custom-designed targeting systems for the Origin 325A spacecraft variant. Hey, that's my ship. The WillsOp design system will premiere with the 2944 model of the 325A and is hotly anticipated by spacecraft enthusiasts. In addition to direct targeting systems, WillsOp is responsible for passive tracking systems that have become an industry-defining standard. Where a targeting suite typically focuses on extracting as much information as possible about one target, tracking systems are necessary for keeping tabs on everything else in a given area. WillsOp's trackers are capable of making dozens of identifiers, limited only by range, available for instant targeting. While any WillsOp targeting suite requires proprietary WillsOp tracking software to function, the tracker is actually manufacturer neutral. WillsOp trackers are produced in OEM models and are made available at cost to spacecraft manufacturers. The company's objective is simple: introduce users to their ecosystem, then trap them when they opt to choose an aftermarket targeting system. It was a moment of redemptive glory for WillsOp when, after nearly 4 decades, they finally secured a valuable long-term UEE military contract. WillsOp has partnered with Anvil Aerospace and the UEE Navy to manufacture both the structure and the software for the Long Look radar system installed in every F-7AR Hornet tracker. The dome-like enclosure installs in the Hornet's upper turret slot, replacing the movable guns with an incredibly powerful radar. The Long Look offers the fullest battlefield view possible in a single-seat fighter, with the processing power to track fleet movements and coordinate squadron-level engagements. A civilian model of the Long Look is also available and can be installed in any Hornet model in place of the standard cargo container. The company's future continues to look bright, although safety mechanisms put in place since the Death Gurr attack have allowed other software systems to once again flourish. Observers frequently cite WillsOp's lack of specialty or boutique sensor options, such as metal penetrative mining scanners, as a source of lost revenue. For their part, WillsOp seems content to be responsible for standard sensor equipment and to leave anything more specific to the also-rans. Next up is Consolidated Outland. Consolidated Outland and its fan favorite Mustang spacecraft are the brainchildren of so-called rebel trillionaire Silas Korner. Born a mere billionaire, Silas was the sole heir to a family fortune that was generated in the early days of the Bremen system settlement. His several times great-grandfather was responsible for settling much of the planet's temperate regions and cashed in deeply when the newly formed United Empire of Earth essentially chose the world to feed their Tavaran war effort. Korner has not been content to sit on his bank balance, doubling his fortune time and time again with his seemingly outrageous but always on-the-money investments. At age 16, he invested half his fortune in a small jump communications company that happened to then find UEE sponsorship and take off. Following that start, millions invested in fish farming immediately reaped a massive return when Earth-based seafood, which could be grown easily on Bremen, became all the rage on developing colonies. the pattern continued as he invested in electronics, mining, remote charting, and even the increasingly faltering terraforming industry, always with great success. His current interests are truly diverse. He can be aptly titled everything from a shipping magnate, full owner of Tricross Lines, among others, to a news mogul, controlling interests in no fewer than 9 Texcast and Hollow outlets. But even more outrageous than his investments is his seeming lack of a personal life. Since his rise to fame, tabloids have stalked him at every turn for the slightest sign of anything prurient, and have consistently come up empty. In True's Corner's apparent sole love is astronautics. Since crossing the multi-billion mark at age 22, he has become a passionate space pilot and a collector of rare ship designs. His collection, which currently numbers some 300-odd ships, is housed in a massive underground museum on Bremen and includes everything from a vintage Robert Space Industries Zeus to the sole surviving Drake Lobster prototype, which remains unflown and still packed in its shipping foam. Consolidated Outland is the end result of his lifelong interest, his attempt to build what he deems to be the perfect spacecraft. Although the name and associated corporate background is strongly intended to imply an alliance of distant worlds toward a noble technological goal, in True's Corner owns 100% of Consolidated Outland. No Mustang variant takes shape without his input, and he has been known to appear without ceremony on the factory floor, insisting that changes be made on the fly to in-production spacecraft. Consolidated Outland is based on Corner's homeworld of Bremen, and no corporate facilities are located off-world. Corner's private property is also Bremen-specific, and he apparently leaves the planet only for pleasure. Test flying a new spacecraft model on the fringes of Charon's Nebula is a favorite pastime of his. He communicates with buyers and off-world interests exclusively via telepresence robot. While Corner refuses to comment on his personal life, he has been outspoken in his criticism of other manufacturer spacecraft, seemingly finding vocal fault with every design from the Aurora, which he calls a flying trash can, to the Gladiator, a half-assed toy for full-grown children to play fighter hero, to the Freelancer, unprintable. Corner is somewhat naturally an avid star racing fan. He owns a top-tier racing team outright, the Blue Devils, and maintains luxury box seats at all Murray Cup events. Consolidated Outland began life innocently enough, producing vanity spacecraft conversion kits. The conversion kit business was Corner's attempt to stealthily enter the industry, to prove that he could marshal the resources needed to produce high-quality aerospace parts before springing the Mustang on the galaxy. The first range of conversion kits were high-quality style kits for common spacecraft, chrome trim for the Aurora CL, decorative spoiler attachments for the Freelancer, and things like that. No new craft based on these designs are available today, and existing ships fetch extraordinary sums on the secondary market. The reaction from specialists at the time was, and continues to be, that they were high-quality attachment parts that served no practical purpose. Seemingly Corner's attempt to fix what he saw as visually broken spacecraft designs. Consolidated finally hit it big with the more crowd-pleasing aftermarket F-7A Hornet kit, which converts the appearance, but not the hardpoints, of civilian Anvil Hornet fighters to match their military counterparts. With the launch of the Mustang, manufacturing of F-7A conversion kits has ceased, although the kits are still readily available. Whether this has to do with a desire to focus on Mustang development, or to rumors that the conversion kits were in no way licensed through proper channels at Anvil, is anyone's guess. The Mustang is the ship Corner has always wanted to build, a stylish, fast, and low-priced alternative to the RSI Aurora and Origin 300 series. The Mustang looks like nothing else in space and utilizes over 50 unique alloys in order to keep weight down and allow for its mass production on a less developed world. Internally, the vast majority of systems come from the company directly, from the Consolidated Outland Magma Jet engine to the Consolidated Outland Icebox P cooling system. Some systems, such as weapons and shields, are still provided by outsources. Consolidated Outland maintains that they do not construct weapons. They simply allow weapons to be mounted on their ships for proper defense. While only the standard Mustang Alpha is currently available for sale, rumors claim that a series of variants are available in limited numbers to the proper buyers, such as Outer Worlds militia units, and that these are being developed with a likely eye towards eventual wide release. All that is known for sure is that none of these ships will be the Twin Mustang, a makeshift long-range double fuselage variant developed early on by simply welding two incomplete Mustangs together. The Twin was naturally unstable and a resulting crash killed two test pilots. Corner issued a rare quote to the press saying that the Twin Mustang was a terrible, terrible idea which will not be revisited. Speculating on the basis for Koerner's involvement in any business isn't done easily, although it does seem that Consolidated Outland is here to stay. With the discovery of additional metal resources on Bremen and the general success of the Mustang range, it seems safe to say that Consolidated is hard at work on their next big thing. All right, next let's talk about the Murray Cup. The Murray Cup is the unquestioned jewel in Star Racing's Triple Crown. Every year, top racing teams pour blood, sweat, and money into attempting to take the top ranking in the challenging system-wide race. The Murray Cup tradition dates back to the early settlement of the Ellis system circa 2467. The government's move to terraform four planets at once in the newly discovered system led to a necessarily massive influx of population and space equipment. With little to do other than wait for their machines to begin altering planetary core temperatures, terraformers and their families began to pass the time by racing their idle work spacecraft. Soon, makeshift racing challenge tracks were constructed using leftover terraforming equipment, and company craft were modified for speed. Before long, racing wasn't something to do while not terraforming, but rather terraforming was something you did so you could race. The pastime's popularity spread beyond the system, and soon non-terraformers began to arrive to try their hand on the challenging course. Meanwhile, Eamon Murray smelled profit. Murray was a criminal and a gambler who amassed a small fortune by selling bored terraformers drugs and other contraband. He became fascinated with the makeshift races, not as a competitor, but as an organizer and bookie. He began taking bets on the amateur system races. After 6 months, Murray found that he was making more money from booking bets than he was dealing contraband. Never one to take a small fortune when a large one might be close behind, Murray committed resources to legitimizing the races, offering a small credit purse for the winner of what became known as the First Murray Cup. This first official race concluded with Ian Rickard as the 2479 champion. An atmospheric specialist for Gaia Planet Services, Rickard's claim to fame became the sheer amount of customization he applied to his RSI Nova Courier ship, beginning a five-century tradition of cup winners personally modifying stock spacecraft. The reaction to the newly organized racing was electric. New racers from all over the Empire and even beyond were lining up to take part, and with each successive year, the cup prize became larger. By 2488, Murray had gone legit. The erstwhile drug runner had repositioned himself as a public figure and the father of modern star racing. The Murray Cup is divided into two race types, Classic and Blitz. Classic racing is exactly what would be expected, ships trying to out-navigate each other as quickly as possible. Blitz takes into effect ships' weaponry, allowing pilots to engage in limited combat during the race to disable but not destroy competitors. Though most pilots tend to specialize in one racing type or the other, to really become successful in the Murray Cup, it is important to master both skill sets. Racers will train for years to improve their off style, with only a few exemplary pilots ever becoming truly ambidextrous. The Murray Cup's inherent difficulty comes from the course itself, which now spans the entirety of the Ellis system and consists of multiple stages. Each leg is designed to take advantage of natural adverse stellar obstacles present in the system, such as asteroid belts and gravity wells, and, in the last few centuries, man-made obstacles like variable agility rings and targeting gate locks. Some sections of the track notoriously require such a high level of precision piloting that they have earned themselves infamous nicknames such as the Sorrow Sea or the Boneyard. However, as much as the Murray Cup is about a proud racing tradition, the officials in the league continue to make annual alterations to the track. This is done to maintain the high degree of difficulty in the face of near constant improvements that manufacturers like RSI and Origin are engineering to make their racing craft ever faster and more maneuverable. Of course, a ship is nothing without a pilot, and with the Murray Cup broadcast live across the spectrum, Cup winners quickly become legends in their own right. There are few who can think of the sport without mentioning greats like Tara McConaway, who in 2495 became the first person to ever win two Murray Cups, or Isagon Addo, who ushered in an era of interspecies participation as the first Banu to ever win. Then there are those who make history not just by winning, but by how they do it. Take Dax the Hax Emmelman, who in 2731 set a new speed record thanks to his Aurora's heavily modified thrusters. Generations of tinkerers since then have continued to strive to push that record even farther. Then there is the inspirational tale of Fabus Capaldi, who won in 2798 despite suffering from Rauch's syndrome, a true lesson that anything is possible. In more recent years, we have seen the rise of greats like the Bakshi racing family, who have almost 40 years of racing and 3 victories under their combined belts, and many more to come. Underdog Hypatia Daring still has fans clamoring for her to come out of retirement after a thrilling come-from-behind win in 2934. Yet tragically, the pilot who is still at the forefront of most people's minds is 2942's winner, the late Zach Hugh. Fatalities are no stranger to star racing. Hundreds of racers and spectators have been killed as a result of accidents in a half millennia of Murray Cup racing. None, however, have shaken the galaxy in racing culture like the accident that capped the 2942 Murray Cup. After a hard-fought race, pilot Zach Hugh began the traditional victory lap, only to be hit headfirst by an amateur pilot a lap behind who had lost control of his ship. With that sad ending, racing's greatest prize was awarded to a widow, and the Murray Cup Racing League moved behind closed doors to once more adjust the future of the event. In 2943, Commissioner Marco Verender announced that the race's qualification process was being revisited in the wake of the 2942 tragedy. Starting with this year's race, qualification is now determined by a point system that spans the entirety of the Cup racing season. Pilots who wish to qualify for the grand finale must earn 20 points by placing in other authorized Cup races, with 3 points awarded for first place, 2 for second, and 1 for third. The change, as well as updates to the rules for Blitz weaponry states, have been roundly criticized by race spectators who feel it cheapens the tradition in the name of safety and order. The overall impact to the race will be known soon. This year's season is drawing to a close, and a number of standout pilots who have already achieved the necessary 20 points are being followed closely by the media. Well, that is going to wrap up episode 23 of Star Citizens United. If you would like to reach me, you can email me at scupodcast@gmail.com. Find me on Google Plus. Just look for Lex Starwalker and follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Please visit the website starwalkerstudios.com, where you can find the show notes for this episode and all the Star Citizens United episodes. You can also find my other podcasts there. I want to thank you again for strapping in and flying with me on another episode of Star Citizens United. Until next time, I'll see you out there. This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts. Please see all that Starwalker Studios has to offer at starwalkerstudios.com.